Yes, guys, what's good? You're tuned into Manga Masala, Pi Radio South Asian Show. My name's Gerns. I'm here with Halima and Simran.
Hey. Hello.
And I hope that the audio is sounding all right.
Are you wearing a Power Ranger shirt?
I am. This is from Instagram. So I saw it and I had to get it. Power Rangers movie, if you know, you know.
Can you shout out the shop so I can buy one?
I was just about to say, do you know who would love that, Quadri? Do you know what he does? Mm. Like, on YouTube, he watches, like, top 10 Power Ranger reveal moments. Yeah, like, at his big age. I'm not exaggerating. Like, I'll be watching. Like, we're just doing our own thing, and he's, like, he's literally watching, like, top 10 best fights Power Ranger.
For goodness sake.
This is a 30-plus-year-old man.
I mean, I'm here for it. I can totally relate.
Where's it from?
Yeah, I'll have to. It's honestly just, you know, those like random Instagram ads that pop up. I saw it and I was like, you know what? This movie actually is one. As someone that didn't watch much TV growing up, this is one of the things that I actually did watch. I think it's because it was on VCR. Yeah, VCR is the TV. VHS. What's the difference between VCR and VHS?
I've never even heard of VCR.
Isn't VCR the recorder? VHS is the tape.
How do you know that?
Yeah. Excuse me.
Anyway.
I'm a 90s baby.
Barely.
Barely.
The last, like, 68 days of the 90s.
Anyway, it was one of the things that my grandma had on tape. So, obviously, every time we went there, it was, right, let's whack that on. And, yeah, love Power Rangers. R.I.P. Tommy, who died, actually, a couple of years ago. The actor who played Tommy. Yeah. You know who I mean? Have you watched Power Rangers?
Like, on and off, yeah.
Do you remember the guy that had the long hair?
No.
Right. Well, he's one of the people that's been across like so many of the Power Rangers movies, and he passed away a couple of years ago, so that was sad. But yeah, great movie.
My favorite was the pink one.
Yeah, I think that she's actually one of my first crushes. You know, the pink Power Ranger.
Sexual awakening, the pink Power Ranger.
Which is, I've said before, like it's weird because it's kind of the exact opposite of my type now. And it's just it's very weird. But that, and it was like Daphne from Scooby Doo, you know, Sarah Michelle Gellar.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, I was just like, but that again, that's like entirely opposite of what I'm actually attracted to now as a fully fledged adult. So like,
yeah, but you just liked what you saw, innit? Like, them times, that's probably all you were seeing.
Yeah, true. From my limited, I was about
VHS
to say, yeah,
library, yeah.
Exactly. That sounds no, limited VHS library sounds quite dodgy, not gonna lie.
Never mind.
Let's not get off. Come on, our case. But hello, welcome everyone. First of all, because it will be either tomorrow or the day after, probably. Eid Mubarak to Halima.
Eid Mubarak.
So
who did it?
My sister and my cousin.
Oh, such a slay having people that can do stuff like that for you.
Honestly.
Do you always do it like a couple days before, so then it's like the best,
It's about 48 hours for like the optimum stain development.
Yeah, I've only just realised that's why they do it like that in weddings. That makes a lot of sense.
I haven't watched it. You could see like it's still. You're not supposed to put water in it, which is really hard to get my sister to like. To get water in a cup and like for me to wash my face and brush my teeth with like water from a cup.
When did you get it done?
Just last night.
Okay.
And then I slept with it, but I've not peeled like all of the thingy off yet.
So as we're obviously at the end of Ramadan at this point, any key reflections that you've had over the past month, Lima, this Ramadan as we about to enter Eid?
Do you know what? Like, glad you asked, actually. I feel like this Ramadan, like, alhamdulillah, has been a good one for me in the sense of, like, I feel like I've been more aligned with, like, God and, like, my spirituality this Ramadan than previous ones. I feel like it's really hard, I feel like, to kind of, like, stop and, like, just refocus everything on, like, just 1 month. But this year, I feel like I have really been able to do that, and I feel like I've been a lot more consistent with like my praying, and I've like really been able to prioritize that, and I feel like it has really strengthened like my relationship with God. And I feel like I'm at a place now where in life, obviously I talk a lot about how I'm just super anxious all the time about like the future and aging and all of those things. I have such aging anxiety, but I feel like this past month being forced to like slow down and just like connect with God every single day, like multiple times a day, it has put me a lot at ease, and like I'm kind of really just like falling back, trusting God's plan, trusting that I am favored by God, and that, like, you know, what happens will always just be for the best. And yeah, so that's been like a nice...
Aww, I'm happy for you.
Thank you. So yeah, that's been like a nice little spiritual journey for this past month.
When is Eid? Is it tomorrow or Monday?
Tomorrow, Monday, depending on when we see the moon.
When do you find out?
Tonight. Yeah, it doesn't make for like good planning. Like if you're working and you need to take the day off and you're like, maybe I need it on Monday, maybe I don't.
Yeah,
need it
maybe
on Monday,
not.
I think it'll be tomorrow.
You think?
Yeah.
Do you get like an inkling like each year? Like, do you think it's going
to
be?
No, because they start to like, it's like some scientific thing. So like they start to like see like, okay, is it likely we're going to see the moon or whatever? I don't know, some astrological trends. So apparently, but we'll see. Exciting times.
Yeah. Over.
I was going to ask you a question. Have you ever travelled during Ramadan?
Yeah, like 2 years ago, 2023, I went to Umrah, I went to Saudi Arabia for, during Ramadan.
Yeah.
But other than that, no.
That must have been special.
That was incredible. That was absolutely incredible. Like, it was 22 million people that year in Mecca.
Crazy.
But this year it's more. I think yesterday they saw a record number of 3.7 million people just yesterday that went to Mecca, which is incredible. Listen, one thing Muslims don't do is pray about worship. Listen.
Yeah.
We are on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's sad, though, that my mind immediately goes to a place of worry about, like, safety, because I know there have been things previously where, like...
Stampedes, yeah. But I think they've got, like a lot of thingies in place now, a lot of protocols in place. Like, I think they've learned a huge lesson from that. And obviously, the Mecca had went through like a massive renovation anyway. So I was seeing as well, like on Twitter, someone was talking about how it's such a feat of like engineering and architecture that they have the capacity to accommodate for 3.7 visitors. Because it's not just space, it's like sanitation, the toilets, like, you know what I mean? Like, and like, where else in the world will you get 3.7 people in one space at the same time? Like, I think I genuinely think that's the only place in the world with that kind of capacity. I can't think of anything else from the top of my head. I don't know if you guys can.
No.
But then there was one thing where I was like, and this is what I always say, like I love going to Saudi, because obviously it's like it's a religious thing, it's a spiritual thing for me. But when we're talking about like, oh, the Saudis have done this like huge feat of engineering, you have to talk about like the South Asian kind of laborers that are actually the ones like keeping up and like looking after that place and like cleaning it and all of that. So yeah
everything's layered, everything's got context behind it. It's just exactly. Got to be wary of that and plan your life accordingly.
How was Budapest, Simran?
Guys, I am obsessed with Budapest.
Have you been more than once?
Yeah, I went 2022.
Oh, it's really nice, isn't it?
Because I feel like I've seen like a few other cities around there, but I feel like this sounds bad, but I didn't have like massively high expectations of Budapest. I think I went to Krakow a couple of years before. I thought it'd just be like that. Mm-hmm. And I got there and I was so surprised and I loved it.
Yeah.
I think it's such a beautiful city.
What, you loved
city.
It this time around or both times that you
both.
Went?
Both.
Yeah.
I think it's so beautiful.
The architecture is stunning.
I would 100% go again. But then I feel like that's just too many times to go to the same city.
No, I don't think it is.
I feel like
everyone always has like one place that they just return to over and over and over again. Like a lot of people. Like when I go on holiday and I'll be sat next to someone on the plane and I'll just get talking to someone. They'll be like, oh yeah, this is like our 10th time coming to this destination. I'm like, wow.
Country, same hotel every single time that I don't know how to do that.
My cousin does that. Well, to be fair, they've got two kids.
Yeah, I know people that do that.
They've got two kids for them. Different. It's just easy, but I'm like, still, come on, branch out a little bit.
No, but I think for me personally, as someone that is... Wait, now I'm really quiet. Let me sort myself out. Testing.
I can hear that.
It's not about what you can hear. It's about how the waves are appearing, they're fine. Right. As someone that... is less than ambitious in terms of my own travel, if I know that I enjoy something, I'm perfectly happy to just go back to it, enjoy it. Fair enough about maybe changing up the hotel, but in terms of the country, like for me, the place that comes to mind is Split in Croatia.
Oh, I love Split.
Yeah, and I've only been twice, but I have, for me, that's somewhere that's like, it's obviously abroad, it's hot, It's got everything that I kind of want. I like the food there.
Did I go to... You could go from Split. Like,
I feel... we've been on various things, but I think maybe we went. I can't remember. But yeah, just in general, like the island hop in there, like, yeah.
Yeah, it's
I like
amazing.
It.
I'm the opposite. You should, 100%.
Yeah, go. It's nice.
But I'm the opposite. Like, I don't think I've ever, apart from like Bangladesh and America, where my family are, and Saudi because of pilgrimage, but like, I don't think I've ever been to any other country more than once.
It is interesting.
Because like, I like to always go somewhere new, like, tick it off.
I thought I was like that, and I've been to Germany 4 times in my life.
Yeah, no.
Why have I been to Germany 4 times?
But it's like,
don't know. Something
fair
you're
enough.
Gonna have to tell us.
For me, it's like the thing that's the extreme, which I find quite interesting, is I know a couple of people who their families like have like maybe their own like villa out in like Spain.
Yeah, that
and
would
they,
make sense.
And they literally
that's different.
Every summer they will spend at least like 2 weeks going there like family holiday.
That.
But I'm kind of like I do get that. You know what I mean? Like
I feel like, do you know what it is? Like for me, the reason I don't now is because I'm young. I'm like I've got nothing tying me down, so I just want to see as much because I also love to just go to a different country. So I want to see as much as I can now, and then when I'm older, I probably will start to revisit places because I can't like just pick up my kids and like go to like just anywhere. Do you know what I mean? Like. I feel like when you're a family and you've got kids and stuff, it's more of a consideration and you do end up repeating places.
For sure.
But yeah, Budapest was great. And we got really lucky with the weather. It was so sunny and clear skies. Aww. The vibes were great. Weren't even wearing like jackets and stuff during the day.
Wow.
I enjoyed seeing all your TikTok antics, even if they were just for friends on this story.
I know.
Yeah, it was cute.
Yeah. Here for you, bring some of that energy to Manga Masala, Simran. We need to capitalize on that content.
I'm back
creation.
On the road again.
Oh, tell us then.
Back on what? Oh, the road. I was about to ask you. I was thinking about.
Well,
asking
I never
you.
Really was off the road because I had a temporary car, but I'm back on the road officially in the new car.
It sounds like you've been banned when you're like, oh, I've been off the road.
Yeah, 13 month ban. No.
Go on. Tell all about the new car then.
Well. There's really not that much to tell.
She got a new car.
Yeah, long story short, I looked at the same car as the car that I lost. And I was like, no, that's a bit boring getting the exact same car, same model, same color, everything. Then I looked at a different brand, which was a Ford, and I didn't really vibe with that. And then the temporary car I've been driving is a Corsa, which, not going to lie, I probably never would have considered, but I've been loving it for the last month or however long it's been.
Some of the newer Corsas are like, they're really, really great.
Yeah, so we got a little Corsa, and I love him, or her. I actually haven't decided yet.
I think you should make it a her now.
I think it might be a her.
Yeah, you had a son for a long time. It's time to embrace being a girl mum.
Could always be non-binary.
Yeah, true. Yeah.
Huh?
Non-binary, then you don't have to decide.
Well, I'm thinking, I'm going off the vibes that I'm getting while driving it, but I haven't decided yet.
You're letting
the car
decide.
I'm getting the vibes, exactly. I'm getting the vibes of it's a girl with a boy name, like an Alex or a Charlie.
Oh, okay. Wow. Okay.
Interesting.
Wow.
It's cool though you said Corsa because Sachin actually has got a new car recently and he's got a Corsa. Is yours?
I love him.
Is yours electric or no?
No,
his is electric. Right, yeah.
Sorry, I said no, like, I love killing the planet.
Electric, they're better for the environment, but they are more expensive, right?
They are.
Yeah. But no, that's cool. How has it been driving it, then?
Weird. It's been less than 24 hours since we got it.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah. New.
Do you feel a bit like you're cheating?
Not cheating. I feel like I'm in mourning.
I was about to say, excuse me, the girl is, grieving right now.
Widow.
Like, because initially I was like, I'm going to call it Jackson. And then I was like, that's way too close to Jake. It's like just that weird.
You can't
replace
him, Simran.
Nah, it's
you
not
can't.
Replaceable.
It's not.
No. Just it is weird. I'm still getting used to the new car. I think I stalled it today as well. But it's fine.
Good for you, though. I'm glad that you've got that. Because I feel like you're quite similar to me in that, like, driving kind of does define you a little bit because you were driving around everywhere.
I think less so now, which is why we went for something like a Corsa as well, because I didn't need to focus on like doing 200 plus mile journeys all the time.
Yeah.
Because I'm doing a lot less of that. I think it's something that was kind of went into consideration with this car as well.
Fair enough. I mean, obviously I'm Skoda gang all the way, but you know. Yeah, what are you?
An Audi.
Audi. Fair. But yeah.
He's got a sexy car. Not that your Skoda's not sexy.
Yeah, I was about to say, like...
I'm getting a new car
as well. What's your car's name?
Whose?
both of you, if you have them.
I don't have one.
Yeah, I was like, your car doesn't have one. But it doesn't yours,
mine,
Carlos.
Well, I don't really call it. It's my sister basically called it because it was kind of like we were sharing the car at the time. And I had, like, named the car that I had previously because it was just me that was driving at the time. My first car was called Ralph. Because it was just Ralph Energy. It was really just that.
Wreck-It Ralph.
And obviously Ralph died nearly 10 years ago now. R.I.P. Wow. And then after, when we got this car after that, I think it was my sister wanted the turn because she was the one that was driving it, mainly because I was still at uni. She was at school. So, yeah, she called it, like, Tootsie, which is just, like,
that
I don't
car,
know.
That name does not match your car.
I think it's because Tootsie, like, a toot sweet, like, it's, like, red and white, I don't know. But this is why, in the nearly 10 years I've had it, I haven't called it that. It's more just been my car, and I've just kind of been like, it's whatever. But, yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe you should give it a name.
No, I think I'll just long it out until the next one, and then when I think the next car will be definitively mine, do you know what I mean?
Right. So yeah.
It's like, yeah.
I will name it.
I will.
I will bestow upon it a name.
Naming ceremony.
I will take it into consideration. I'm not making any promises. Take these things very seriously.
Do you guys in your guys' culture have naming ceremonies?
No, but we do have a practice where you can do it like before or after the baby's born, but you go to the gurdwara and there's like a kind of a sort of ceremony thing, but they select a random page and the first letter that appears on that page should be what you name your child with.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh.
So I'm guessing a lot of people in the sea keen to see land on the letter S then.
Yeah, S's and K's.
I don't know. Personally, I don't know if there's any particular ceremony or anything, but yeah. I think a lot of it is to do with family input, though. Like,
Yeah. Same.
I wish some of my Indian family could have been more persistent, but you know. Yeah.
Can you actually explain the story of how they landed on Carlos?
28 and a half years ago, in October 1996. I don't know. Is the main answer.
Do you know who kept your name?
Kept.
As in, like, who named you?
I don't know who came up with Carla specifically. Obviously, I was the first child. I think the main influence was Carla Santana, but then also my parents, when they were obviously just fresh out of like medical school and stuff, and they had a lot of Spanish friends there. It was actually really weird. There's like 10 couples or something, and like the majority of them were Spanish. I don't know how that happened, but yeah.
Me naming my child Bad Bunny.
No, but I think
why mom? Oh, well, I just had loads of Spanish friends.
But yeah, no, I think that is literally it. And then obviously the theme stuck for for my sisters. But obviously they had to get a bit of Indian in there, so that's why Anand is my middle name. And then I do know that they were literally on the way to do the whole name registering thing, and then my dad was just like, let's just stick Jonathan in there as well.
Why? Right? Who's Jonathan?
I don't know. Jonathan's my middle name. So I'm Carlos Jonathan Anand Ganani.
I like Anand as a name a lot.
Yeah, Anand is nice.
I like it, but then before when I've had like life moments where I've been like, do I actually want to just start going by this? I've been like, nah, like...
Carlos is your name.
It is. It's like Carlos is my name, and also I don't really feel like Anand really like... It encapsulates me.
I feel like it's like an older Indian man's name.
Yeah.
You embody Carlos, and you like, because
that's the annoying thing is because I do fit the name very well, but not for the right reasons.
Well, you have that like ethnic ambiguity side to you a little bit. Where like if I was ignorant, I don't think I would really place you as Indian.
No, exactly.
Yeah, because you look a bit ethnically ambiguous and your name is Carlos, I immediately would just be like somewhere Latin.
Mm. Yeah, it's 100%.
Yeah. It's the story of my life. It's long. But I'm also just like, sometimes I just wish that I could have been called an Indian name. Because,
Dev, and just got it over and done.
Yeah,
it.
Dev, something like Dev. That. Just so that then Dev. It avoids the first like 5 minutes of every conversation being like,
oh yeah,
blah,
you're
blah, 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 blah.
Carlos, you're Indian. What
I'm fed up of this. Like, oh, really? I've been fed up with it, but especially like 28 and a half years down the line.
At least your
like,
name, at least your name is not the actual blueprint name for every meme you've ever looked at in your entire life.
True.
Every like every toxic brown girl, yeah. If her run from her if her name is Simran. Like,
yeah. To be fair, I think it's also like with me, it's not my surname as well, because Ganani, my surname,
yeah.
it's Cindy. It's not that like well known. So then people, again, when they see Carlos, will then read it as like more of like an Italian Granani, like yeah, that. Yeah, like, it's yeah, just like, yeah, yeah. And it's like, no, that's not. Sometimes no, I wish even if I hadn't had a Indian first name, I wish could I at least have had like just a Bay Indian surname that just then puts
Patel
a bit of like.
Where?
Yeah, Dev Patel, like the most.
Why is he on your bread in your brain today or something? It's Dev Patel.
I think I knew someone called Dev Patel once at uni.
Not surprised.
What was I going to say? Carry on.
No. Yeah.
You know, my mum insists that when she named me, that my name was up and coming. Like no one was ever called
that.
And then
she
thinks
she genuinely thinks
like she started. Like,
don't lie. Simran!
Aspire to be that level of Delulu.
Oh my god.
She insisted, she was like hardly anyone was calling their kids Simran back then. Why are we all the same age?
Is that true? Like, is it that the generation before
I don't know very many Simrans older than me. I think I know like one.
So I think she might not be wrong in terms of that before our generation.
But then
Simran
she
wasn't
the
popular.
Only
that's
person.
That's what Kajal's name was
had that thought.
In Dilwale Dulhaniya Le Jayenge, Simran.
I think that's what her inspo came from.
Because that was 95.
That probably, oh, you're right.
95.
I think that's where the inspo came from. I think she says she told me this. And she, because I know one person who's like 40 and has the name. But that's why everyone roughly our age is called Simran.
Interesting.
But I think she thinks she's quite original in that thought. And she's obviously not.
It's like, you know, Alexandra Burke when she thought she created the term
elephant in the room.
So like,
have you never seen the Simran? It's like an essential part of Hun culture, literally.
I love Alexandra Burke.
Look, she basically had an interview and she thought she came up with the phrase elephant in the room. Like she thought she made that up.
It's not that she thought she discovered it in America and was going to be the first person to bring it back to Britain and make it a British thing.
Yeah.
That's why she wanted to name her album it. And she was like, I'll name it that. And then everyone will get acquainted with the saying. And it's like, everyone already knows about Elephant in the Room.
So, like, your mum and Alexandra Burke both obviously genuinely believe earnestly that that's what their experience was. But in actuality.
Fair enough. I will have you know as well that a potential name on the cards was Leonardo, and there was actually...
That's hilarious.
It was actually...
Like the Ninja Turtle.
But I can also see you fitting that, though, like Leo.
Leo, yeah, maybe. Yeah. But there was actually the year before Titanic. But obviously, if I had been named it, everyone would have thought that, it's after Leonardo DiCaprio, but like, no. Anyway, enough about name trauma. Before we get into the main, like... juicy bits of today's episode, let me just pass off with a bit of a I'm not gonna call it a positive thing, but just a bit of like a thing. So obviously last week we were talking all about adolescence, and we spoke about how Joey Barton had come out of, well, I say come out of the woodwork, but he's never really in the woodwork, he's just constantly on Twitter saying stuff. But he obviously made comments about the fact that the lead actor of Adolescence was white and not black, and saying, oh, he's not representing knife crime accurately, blah, blah, blah. And we were obviously like, first of all, shush. Second of all, your brother literally committed, like, knife or axe crime, like, 25 years ago. Like, shush. And literally this week, it's just so ironic. Like, this week, in the aftermath of all these Adolescence comments, it's actually been in the news that he's been found guilty of assaulting his wife. So
are you kidding me?
It was for an incident that happened in 2021, where his wife reported it to the police, but then later retracted the statement. But I think it's still been an ongoing case because obviously there was substantial evidence to suggest that he had done it. But he's now been convicted of assault and given a 12-week sentence, suspended for 2 years, meaning he will not go to prison unless he commits another offence. But still, obviously, been convicted of this. It's just like,
that is crazy. I don't think I've ever seen a clearer example of popcorn and kettle black.
Mm.
Like, I don't think, like, this man.
Literally.
If this man was living in a glass house, my friend, he would be homeless. Like, that's crazy.
Yeah. It's so annoying.
The
as
audacity,
well.
Like, but the thing is, it's like, do you reckon in this situation, like, it's calculated and, like, because he knows he's guilty, he's trying to, like deflect, or do you think he's genuinely that delusional and there's that much cognitive dissonance that he, having assaulted his wife and now been convicted of it, still genuinely believes that black people are the face of crime?
No, I think it's a bit of both, because I think, in my personal opinion, based on various news stories from him from over the years, many of which violent, I don't think he's a very nice person.
Yeah, crazy.
But yeah, like you say, it's just the audacity to be doing this when literally look in your own home. Look at this, focus on yourself and literally look at this picture of him going to court in January. Look at what's around his neck.
It's a Union Jack scarf for those who can't see at home.
Yeah.
Oh, I can't see.
Sigh.
What a freak.
Yeah, well,
in my opinion,
this is literally, it's not even words, it's just shrug.
Yeah,
I don't know literally. If the shoe fits. Right, let me just go sort the camera. Can't believe we spent the first half hour just talking about names.
Sometimes that's what we need, Carlos.
No, it's not what I need. I spend enough of my life doing it.
As soon as you started talking about...
this is meant to be my safe space.
No, but as soon as you started talking about Joey Barton, I saw the light disappear from Simran's eyes. She was really enjoying just waffling.
Waffle. Right. Let's get into it. What have we got? Oh, this is actually positive. Should we start with this, right?
Yeah, go on.
Just Stop Oil. Have you heard about them?
So, no, I've heard about Just Stop Oil, yeah, but I don't know what the story is.
So
yeah,
just,
what have they done?
Just Stop Oil have announced that they're basically wrapping things up because they've
did they stop oil?
Exactly. Just Stop Oil has stopped oil.
What? Really?
Well, basically, they've announced that their final protest is going to be on April the 26th. Their initial demand when they started back in 2022 was the end of new oil and gas. And that's now been ruled as unlawful by the courts. So in early March, the British government confirmed that it is committed to issue no new licences to explore new oil and gas fields. So
they stopped oil.
They stopped. Just they stopped.
That's actually that is incredible. That is actually incredible. Yeah. Like, we've spoken about Just Stop Oil before, right? And I've said before that I get that a lot of people they are like a necessary evil, right? Like, I get a lot of people hate on them because they see them as super disruptive and blah 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 blah. This is a perfect example of they got the job done, guys.
Yeah,
like they did the work. You know, they caused.
I wonder if they'll be recognised for like their work in like pushing this forward.
I think they will. I think they will, not now, but like in decades to come. I think people will look back on it and see that as like a huge causal factor.
Yeah. I mean, if we're here in decades to come, given the fact that... So this is the thing. So they've said like, look, like this direct action as we're doing it has stopped, but it doesn't mean the fight's over because obviously governments around the world are still not doing enough to actually stop the inevitable... catastrophic events that are going to happen given climate change, global warming, unchecked use of oil and gas, etc.
Why do I feel kind of sad?
Yes, like
end of an era.
Yeah,
but it's just I've seen tweets that are just like, well, we'll have to see the stats as to whether they've actually achieved anything. I'm just like, mate, look, this is literally what they wanted to achieve.
Yeah.
And in the process, over the past 3 years, they've kept over 4.4 billion barrels of oil in the ground.
That's incredible. Through their process. That is incredible. And see, this is the thing, right? Like when people are like, oh, well, let's see how successful they've been. It's like, you guys don't understand that. You don't understand what organized action looks like.
Mm.
Like, I think for people, they're like, oh, they're silly. The reason that a lot of people thought of them as being silly in the first place because they think like, oh, well, they can't just change climate. They can't stop climate change by themselves. But that was never what their objective was. Like, something as huge as like the climate crisis, you're never going to have one organization do all the work. Like, you have to pick an area and like just put your focus there. They obviously stated their objection, that their objectives were to... what was it? Stop like new oil.
New oil and gas, yeah.
Yeah. And that's exactly what they've done, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, no, it's literally that. I think a lot of people, when they think about collective resistance, kind of just think that it's going to be, right, let's stand on the table for 5 minutes, chanting, doing some chants, and then, like, it is kind of like, what's it called, girl bossing, right, like, making...
Yeah, tapping tapping on your doorstep.
Yeah, exactly. Like, just, they kind of, they want it to be easy, because they just, like, from what they've seen in movies and stuff, that's what it's like, but obviously the reality is not that. And, yes... the lay person might be inconvenienced by it, but the overall cause, it's worth it, like, at the end of the day. So,
yeah, I agree.
So, props to them for that.
It is a great example of what successful organized action looks like. A stated objective, and then that's it. You win, and then
you call one final protest on April 26th, because the overall bigger picture is still not going in the right direction, but like,
good for them.
Yeah, I think the thing also to bear in mind as well is that, obviously, wary of the fact that a number of Just Stop Oil leaders and protesters are still in jail for sentences of up to 5 years for what they've been doing.
Free them, let them out. Yeah.
But at least now they can be, even if they are in jail, knowing that what they did was worth it.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. So. Well done, everyone.
Yeah, we rate it.
Here's a montage of all the Just Stop Oil moments. Oh, dear. Yeah, I also saw something else that was quite... You know what, actually? This week isn't actually that bad. You'd be happy to know. It's not that... I'm looking through and I'm like, you know what? There's nothing overly negative, really.
That's just wonderful.
I know. I saw a term floating around on Twitter earlier this week, and it just really struck me as something that I can really relate to, and I don't know whether either of you can. I feel like maybe Halima might be able to more. It's the idea of revenge bedtime procrastination.
No.
Was that the first time you heard about it?
I think I've always known that. I've known that I do it, but I just see it written down as like a Wikipedia article. I was like, whoa, this actually, it's a thing.
Yeah. So for those, I think, was it like the Japanese that...
I think Chinese from what I've seen, yeah.
That wasn't me being racist, guys. I genuinely did read Japanese, but it's probably people reporting it wrong.
But no, but I think also probably it makes sense that maybe it's come from... Well, let's give context on what it actually is first. So it's a psychological phenomenon where people stay up later than they desire in an attempt to have control over the night because they don't have as much control during the day.
Yeah.
Which, when I saw that, I think that it does come from China, I was like, that kind of does make sense, because obviously countries like China are renowned for having quite strenuous work days, and they work people quite hard. Mm. So for the fact that you would then need to, like,
it's essentially like, claw your time back later. It's essentially like having some me time, basically, but like having to do it at the end of the day when you're supposed to be sleeping, because the rest of the time, like, you're busy and doing things.
Yeah, because I feel like, especially like if you finish work at, say, 5, you have like an hour commute home, you might exercise, you might have something to do, or you have kids that need like looking after, dinner, bath times, getting ready for bed, tidying up, I don't know. Yeah. By the time you're done for the day, it's easily like 9, 10 o'clock at night.
Yeah. And then you've got to go to sleep again to wake up the next day to like go work all over.
And you feel
again,
like you've not had a second to actually do anything that was not work or housework.
Yeah. For me, I think, especially in the whole like working from home era as well that's begun, I think I find it quite hard to get stuff done when there's distractions. So a lot of the time, if I'm staying up, it'll also be because I'm like, okay, I like this, I've got my own space, it's quiet, it's just me, I can do what I need to do.
That's me. That's why I stay up late a lot. Like, I mean, part of it is just because I have ADHD and like I have really dysregulated sleep, but I work a lot in the nighttime because I feel as though during the day there's just too much noise going on. Like, I'm too overstimulated, there's too many people awake, and in the nighttime I know that I can do this work and I'm not like missing out on anything else. Do you know what I mean? Like, I don't have to do anything else. No one is calling me for anything, no one is whatever, you know.
Yeah. So I just thought it was interesting just to see that and be like, yeah, this is an actual thing, and it's like a psychological phenomenon that is recognised and actually is, you know what I mean?
And you know what we need to do with that information? We need to reform the working week.
Abolish the 5-day work week.
Yes, we need to abolish it.
Abolish the 9-to-5, abolish the 5-day work week.
Yes, yes, yes.
Something tells
me that's not gonna happen. Capitalism is fine either way.
Yeah, it's not going to cripple guys.
Yeah,
but you've seen all the companies in the UK that have been projecting and trialing.
It actually
this,
increases
like,
productivity. Yeah,
it increases productivity. It decreases how often people are getting sick.
Yeah,
people are happier at work for it as well, and the time that they are at work is being spent more productive anyway. Mm. Because let's be honest, I would say probably more than half of corporate jobs, you can get the work done in like less than half of the day.
Yeah, 100%. I think
you're there
think,
for 8 hours, but you can probably do it in about three.
100%. And I think that's the reason why people actually, it's not that the work necessitates a 5 day working week. It's that the 5 day working week necessitates taking that long with your work because you have it. Like you're going to dawdle, you're going to procrastinate, you're going to do something else, you're just going to work super, super slowly. Whereas if you know that like, I've got 4 days to get the work done, you're going to be more productive because you have less time
it's
to get it done.
It's busy work. You just spend so much time just looking like you're doing something.
Yeah.
I mean, I can't relate that much because I'm not like in a corporate job, but I can imagine that that's like the case, definitely.
Yeah. Which is why working from home is good, but time off's better.
Mm. Abolishing working period is better. Unemployment is the best. But anyways, yes, abolish the working week, 5 day working week. Do you think they will? I think that. I think they might. Very.
I
like,
think more and more companies, like in my job search, and this is a sector that doesn't really get the 4 day work week thing. But even in my job search, I've been seeing places that do 4 day work weeks.
Because I think that some companies will start, they'll do it based on the fact that it increases productivity, and then I think some companies will start to like allow that, like advertise it as like a working perk, and I think that will attract more people, and then as that attracts more people, other companies will start to do it like to have a competitive edge in terms of
recruitment. I think like once this generation of like the upper managers, boardrooms, whatever, they retire, we'll see a whole shift in like what the world of work looks
like. True.
In terms of like managers being more relaxed and more relatable and cheery and actually a bit more adept at using like computers and stuff. And then again, like, and also working styles. Like, I was very fortunate in my last job to have a boss that was very like, if the work is done, like,
I don't care. Sort of thing.
Like, she was like, log on, kind of, obviously don't take the mic, but like log on later if one day if you have to, if you're not feeling up to it, like that kind of thing. Like she was very chill when she was just like a get the work done kind of person. As long as it's done, you're cool.
I feel like a lot of people are starting to become like that, truthfully.
And obviously she was 35, so I think that makes a big difference.
Guys, when you think about it, 5 days a week at work, 8 hours a day,
40 hours of your week
at work. And that's not even accounting for like if you're traveling in and out. Who decided?
Yeah, I think that's the thing that really annoys me. And this is coming from someone that doesn't even do daily commutes to work and whatever. But just it's more the idea of it is like, how can that actually be fair? And especially before COVID, with the whole like everyone was going in and commuting in. How was it allowed? Or like who decided that? Okay, yes, we'll have an eight-hour working week, but then there's an hour to and from work that's not in your paycheck. That's just you're expected to just do that. It's an hour of your time, like whatever. Mm. Like, I don't know.
It's a disproportionate amount of your life to spend at work, especially for a demographic of people that largely don't actually even find purpose from work. You know, like most people don't, unfortunately. I think it would be different if you did. Have you seen like, you know, the CEO of BrewDog?
Yeah, the one who's married.
The old one,
The one who's married and what's
from Maiden Chelsea. Them two, oh my God, are like, this might be like super niche, but so it's the CEO of BrewDog, which is like, what is it, like a beer?
Yeah, although he's had some allegations against him.
Yeah. So basically, he's partnered up with like an influencer socialite, you know, Toph from Made in Chelsea. What did she do?
Was it Made in Chelsea?
Yeah, she was
I'm a celeb. She used to be.
She's best friends with Stanley Johnson.
Yeah, exactly.
She met on the met on I'm a Celeb and then went on to be on Celebrity Gogglebox with him all the time. Like,
anyways, very weird. But them two like have come out, like, so they're in a relationship and them two have come out and they're like, obviously they're both like entrepreneurs and business people or whatever, and they're like, guys, we don't believe in work-life balance. We believe in work-life integration. If you love what you do, you never want to stop doing it. I want to work all the time. I want to work from my house. And it's like, you lot are so out of touch. How many people in this world are doing jobs that they like? I'm sorry, if you're a cleaner or a refuse collector or a bus driver. What, you think people want to bring that into their homes and be doing that all the time? I hate the upper class. They're so, like, delusional.
But I hate, like, it's like that Molly Mae 25 hours a day.
24 hours a day, my friend. No, not everyone has the same 24 hours that you do with your nanny and your cleaner and your chef.
Everybody has the same 24 hours as Beyonce or whatever.
Stupid, stupid. People are so out of touch.
Oh, my God. I have two things to say.
Go on.
Number one. Everyone's really happy because we have the first big meme of 2025, and it's that guy with the morning routine. You know, the guy with the ridiculous routine.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
He wakes up at like 3 a.m.
for
the
first 3 3 hours, does nothing but wash his face, put some banana
for like 3 4 hours. He does nothing. He wakes up like he does like a journal. He starts the journal on a fresh page. So he's like, every day I start my journal on page one of a brand new book.
What? And
no, obviously he doesn't, but for the video he was using page one.
And it was like, he's doing time stamping his video. So he literally, what was it? He wakes up at 3 or 4 a.m. or something stupid. And then like, it's like a quick moving video. So like, you're not actually people. I think he's probably
stupid.
I think he was thinking that people weren't going to pay attention to what he's doing. But actually, when you look at the timestamp, he goes outside to the balcony and then he comes back in like 40 minutes later. And it's like, well, have you just spent 40 minutes doing in the balcony? And then he starts washing his face and then that's like another 40 minutes. And it's like, you've just done 3 hours of nothing.
There's one, it's like 7:36, he dives into the pool, and at 7:40, he lands in the water. So everyone's like, how did bro spend four minutes midair?
And you know what's funny as well?
I've seen this, yeah.
Of course you have, everyone has. And then the sign behind him says, no diving.
and then, he does two face dunks in like an ice water thing of like this expensive sparkling water. First of all,
apparently their sales have gone up.
Yeah, their sales have gone up, and their like Google searches have gone up by 400%. And then he jumps on a podcast, and all he says is like, "We got to make $10,000."
And you know, like, so everyone's obviously taking the mic because it's absolutely ridiculous, and people are like remaking the video and stuff like that to poke fun at him. And he's done a response video, and he's like, "Yeah, well, first they laugh, and then they copy or then they follow." He's like, "You know how everyone's remaking it? He thinks that they're copying him, not that they're taking the mic out of him." It's crazy.
It's giving a manosphere as well in a weird way.
100%.
Kind of like that entrepreneurial hustle.
My God. We're missing the most important detail is that there's unidentified woman who's handing
headless,
him faceless back silhouette of a woman who's there like handing him the towel, making his breakfast, feeding him, like and then there's like spawns of this guy, right? Like there's so many different other male influencers that are making these types of videos, and a few of them have like an unidentified woman, like they walk through the door after work and the woman takes the coat and she makes him food and then she hand feeds him and I'm like, what is
there's
this?
A clip from another video where he drops the glass bottle of water that he does his face dunk with, it smashes, and then she cleans up the broken glass and gives him a fresh new bowl.
Oh my God.
I'm like, first of all, why did that need to be included in the video that you broke it? First of all, he does very obviously drop it off out of his hand off the table.
That's crazy.
And then she like cleans it up for him. But why did that need to be included?
No.
Guys, I want to segue a little bit, yeah. I wanted to talk about, like, you know, in this situation, like, obviously, well, I'm not going to assume what the dynamic is between him and the women and, like, what's going on and why they're doing it. It might be, like, coercion. It might be some kind of abusive relationship or whatever. Or it might not be. And they might just be doing it because that's what they genuinely want to do. And in their dynamic, they believe that these are the roles of a man and a woman. And in that sense, I want to talk about, like, the role of women in enabling, like, toxic masculinity as well. Because have you seen the recent news of Andrew Tate? It come out yesterday.
His ex-partner.
So he was in a relationship with this woman and she was like, oh, in the beginning it was amazing and it was fantastic and we were so in love and blah, 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 blah. And then she was like, eventually he started like beating her and he started being abusive to her and he started saying to her like, you need to get beaten up. I'm going to beat you up and blah, 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 blah. That's what you're there for. And she's there replying like, why? Like, you know, with that emoji with the eyes, like, why? And he's like, because you're my woman and you deserve to be beat and blah, blah, blah. And eventually she was just saying that it got too much for her and she just realized that he's so violent and that she left the relationship, and now she's like come on social media to try and tell her story and be like, oh my God, I like underwent this abuse and blah, 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 blah. And I was like looking through the thread and I was like, okay, interesting, because firstly it's such a thin line, because it's like, okay, if someone's a victim in it, like just by instinct you want to give them sympathy, you want to empathize with them, but also it's like, you're not his first victim, though. And you knew that. Like, this man is a known trafficker. This man is, like...
So was she actually aware of that at the time?
Yes. It was in 2023.
that they started their relationship. 23 okay. or 24. Like, it was after 2022, I remember.
Okay.
It was 2023, I think. So it's like, at this point, like, people know who he is. People know what he's about. He has, like, got... At this point, he's hiding in Romania because she was like, yeah, I went... me and him were planning to live in Romania and then move to America when he's free and all of these things, right? So she's there talking about this. And I'm like, okay, I'm sorry you went through that, but at what point did you think that it wasn't going to be you? Like, at what point did you not know who you're coupling up with? At what point did you...
But I think that's like, isn't that kind of like the whole guise of it though? That like you get lured in because you are being told that you're special and like you are different from other girls. And it is like, if you're not as confident or self-assured or like not so sure of your self-worth, like I understand how you could get like persuaded into this and then fall victim to it
really?
Eventually.
Really? No, because I feel like maybe in situations where the guy is like a bit more undercover, do you know what I mean? Like where he hides it and things like that. But I think in the case of Andrew Tate, he is literally the face of incel culture. He is literally the face of red pill culture in the manosphere. There is no confusing who this man is, what he's about. All you gotta do is Google. At them times as well, I think it was when the investigation was undergoing. He was literally hiding out in Romania when the relationship started. It takes one Google search to know what he is under investigation for. You know,
100%. But I think there could be like someone somewhere that still could overlook that, thinking like, oh, he's making me feel special, so I must be special. But and like, also, for the first time they felt like they've had like genuine love and attention. Like, all I'm saying is I can see how someone could. Like someone out there in the world could look
who's
past all
this. Particularly vulnerable because
really?
Of maybe
yeah.
their own.
Yeah, 100%. I really disagree with that, 100%. Guys. I really, really disagree with that because no matter how broken you are as an individual, no matter how vulnerable you are as an individual, when someone has a proven, demonstrated track record of being an abuser, of being accused of something as serious as trafficking, it doesn't matter if you yourself are not the victim or you yourself as being treated as special. That is who that person is. Do you know what I mean? So you don't have to be the victim to know that he has victims. And it doesn't matter how broken you are, how vulnerable you are. You should never, ever, ever couple up with someone like that because in a sense, you're enabling it. You're complicit in that abuse of other women. You know, it's this thing of like you don't care about the victims until you are one. You know?
I think I agree with you that it's like it's wrong for her to do that. But I think it's understandable if like maybe she is like mentally not there, or if she's so messed up from previous.
I don't think it's about being mentally not there. I think there's more people that than you would think that could succumb to this and that could fall for this. Like in terms of like, yeah, there is so many reports and there's so much online presence of him and what he says. But when that person is in front of you and talking to you, I get how a certain person could get swayed by all this and kind of forget all what's going on online and who he is and what he has committed, because that's how people fall in love with people like who commit mass murders because of all the like Bonnie and Clyde stuff, or how people do end up in relationships with people who are known to be abusive, people that have come out of jail and all stuff like that. Like people get swindled and blindsided very easily.
Yeah, I see how it could happen, but that's what I'm saying. It's like what we're ignoring here, the big elephant in the room, as Alexandra Burke would say, is the lack of morality that it comes. You know, it's like the erasure of morality, because it's like, again, it doesn't matter how vulnerable you are, doesn't matter how broken you are, doesn't matter how much society tells you that as a woman you need to be in a relationship and you need to win the affection of a man and blah, 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 blah. To be in a situation like that, you have to actively go through a process where you say, I'm going to park my morals at the door, you know? And that is not a victimless crime. That is not a passive process as we're making out. Like, you have to concertedly say, I know this is wrong. My morals tell me that this is wrong. Society tells me that this is wrong. I'm going to ignore all of these huge red flags. I'm going to ignore the string of victims that this man has before him. Ignore any moral compass and, like, choose to partner with him, you know? I feel like that is more of a concerted process that I think people are giving other people credit for. And in a way, I believe I understand completely being vulnerable and being kind of manipulated and brainwashed and things like that. But I think to a degree that infantilizes people, you know, because it's like, at the end of the day, you're still grown. You're still a grown person. You still know right from wrong, you know? And like, you're capable of making decisions. You're capable of making the wrong or right decision.
I agree. But I also just don't think that people have such deeply ingrained like feminist values as like maybe me and you do. But they don't see it as like, oh, he's disrespected women, so he's going to disrespect me. When that person's like in front of you and talking to you, I feel like it's easy to kind of see that. And also not forgetting the power imbalance of him being a very wealthy man who could probably buy her whatever she wanted, like materialistically, or and obviously promising her this whole new life in America once he's free and all that. Like, I feel like I definitely can see how it would happen and how it's not necessarily like parking your morals at the door, but more just going with what is being told to you. And someone that, like Carlos said, might be more vulnerable to becoming a victim in that sense could get easily drawn into.
But again, in this situation, what makes someone more vulnerable is the fact that their morals are not as strong. So even though I see how it can happen, I don't think it's right. Like, I don't think that someone could just, someone should have such a weak moral compass that they're willing to overlook all of those things, you know?
I think there's cases where, like, yeah, women do certainly play a hand in, like, their own victimization, and they do enable abuse and trauma in different ways. But I'm not 100% sure if this is one of those cases. I think she just got swindled, and, like, I don't think it's about her moral compass entirely. I think that's obviously part of it, because there's no way she could have avoided seeing his thoughts, opinions, and his mistreatment of women and ignored that, and there's an excuse for that. But I just do think there is more women that we might think that would succumb to this.
But again, that's because they'll have shared values. Do you get what I'm saying? Like, it's not because it's not you know how you're saying that, oh, that, so, like, someone doesn't have like a strong feminist ideals as you and I and blah 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 blah. It's not even just about that, it's about morality. And someone might actually go into that situation because they have shared values with this guy. They believe that women should occupy a certain role and men should occupy a certain role. Like, no one like you or me who believes that men and women should be equal is going into that situation, you know? Like, I just know I am actually against saying it could never be me. Like, I believe anything could be you, but this situation, it could never be me. I don't think
it was that situation. It's a question of like clout chasing and there isn't much of a power imbalance, and yeah, she did put, like, she did see his treatment of women from his online presence and whatever, like, if it is about that and she did put it to the side, then yeah, it obviously is a question of morals. But yeah. What I'm trying to say is that I can just see how people could get blindsided by all this, because you see it not with just Andrew Tate, but so many other celebrities who have a history of abuse.
Yeah, and I feel like in those situations... And still
go on to find partners.
And I feel like in those situations, a conversation that's just not had enough is how complicit are... Not that you can ever really be complicit in your own victimhood or suffering, but it's like, if you go into... If a man, right, has a string of victims before you and you go into that situation, do you not think there's a level of, like, narcissism to believe that it can't be you? Like, do you not see yourself in, like, the other women? Like, do you not care about the fact that he has a string of victims before you? You know, to me in that situation, I'm like, you've come to partner up with a known abuser, a known trafficker, as in this is a global investigation. And yet in your mind, you don't expect the fact that he's going to abuse you. I'm like, and forget, you know, and even if there wasn't any abuse, right? Even if there was no abuse, even in that situation, why are you partnered up with someone who is an abuser and a trafficker? Do you not care about his victims? Do you not care about the harm that he's caused? Why are you?
But I think what we're not talking about is people who are the aggressor in this situation, how tactful they can be at manipulation and saying that they've changed and they've done something else and they're not that person anymore.
But Andrew Tate wasn't doing that. He was still very much doing his...
But she said at the beginning it was perfect.
Well, that's what I'm saying, because she obviously had shared ideals with him, perfect between their relationship. He was saying, I love you. But he wasn't saying that, oh, I've changed and I don't believe in abuse anymore and I don't believe in these ideals. He was doing his world tour, talking about how he believes women are this and women are that and blah, 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 blah. She was obviously seeing all of it, and she was sat there nodding her head agreeing. Sure. But she didn't care because he was treating her well.
Shall I give what the BBC article on this says? It says that, so obviously in 2022 Andrew and Tristan Tate were arrested in Romania on charges of forming a criminal organization, with Andrew Tate also facing rape charges in the country. Additionally, both brothers have been accused of sexual assault in the US and the UK, though neither has been convicted of these crimes. The lawsuit that was referring to now in regards to his ex-partner describes a pattern of alleged manipulation and grooming that began when the ex-girlfriend first met Tate in Romania, where she'd travelled for a modelling job in the summer of 2024. So, like...
Yeah, so she's not like a destitute little girl. Like, she's an international model.
Tate told Miss Stern that he took care of the women that he dates and that she would not have to work if they were together, according to the lawsuit. Initially, Tate presented himself as charming, But Miss Stern alleges that his behaviour quickly turned demeaning and threatening. According to her claims, he referred to her as his property and subjected her to verbal abuse, calling her an idiot, among other names. She described one incident in the Beverly Hills Hotel in which he allegedly beat, choked, and then threatened to kill her while they were having sex, an encounter she says began as consensual. And the lawsuit has stated that he began verbally degrading her, as he routinely did, but this time it was much worse, more aggressive, and more violent. He goes on to describe said violence. Tate told her repeatedly that if she ever crossed him, he was going to kill her. It claims that after the episode, Miss Stern acted as though nothing was wrong in the hopes of safely leaving the hotel in the morning. She later sought medical attention, where she was seen to. He allegedly texted her saying, "If you ever betray me, you will regret it." The lawsuit states that she waited until he left the country to report the assault to law enforcement.
Yeah, so like, again, that's not a situation where she's like complete. She's an international model. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I don't know if, like, I agree with certain elements of what you're saying, but I also don't think we can assume that she's an international model. Like,
she flew into Romania yeah, for a model.
I think the term international model, do you know what I mean?
The part is that she wasn't completely destitute, is what I'm saying. Mm. Like, from what we can gather, she wasn't destitute. I think ultimately the point I'm making here is that you have these men, right? You have these Andrew Tate type men. And part of the reason that they espouse what they espouse and that they say what they say and they preach and champion what they do is because it pays off. Is because there is a long line of women who are actually queuing up, as repulsed as we are by someone like him, there is a long line of women that queue up to be his partner because they share the same ideals as him, because they believe that, you know, they're going to be the special person and they're going to be this and that and the other. And actually, if we lived in a world where these men were punished, right, if these men were not rewarded with companionship, maybe they would rethink what they preach. And this is a perfect example of someone partnering up with Andrew Tate, despite there being an absolute extensive record of who he is and what he stands for, believing that she was somehow going to be different or that she could overlook all of this because he treats her personally well. You know, it's this thing of like when men say like, oh, don't treat a woman badly, she could be someone's mother or she could be someone's sister. And it's like, why are you seating that in a personal subjectivity? You should respect a woman because she's a human being. That's it, period. And it's the same thing. Like, you shouldn't condemn him because he's hurt you personally when there's already an extensive record of him hurting other people. Like, you shouldn't reward him with companionship in that situation.
I feel like there's also,
I get it's nuanced, but I feel like also sometimes women sometimes do have to draw the line and be like, why am I choosing to partner up with? I feel like, you know what it is, like, Because we live in a world where gendered violence is so skewed against women, sometimes we don't talk about how they're also complicit in enabling certain things, right? Because they will also share certain ideals and blah, 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 blah. And then they're the victim. And it's like, but up until then, you were like encouraging all of this.
I think the danger is that it's, I get what you're saying. And I think it's something that's worth bringing to the table. And I think this is probably a platform where it can be discussed. I'll be with me on the sidelines. Yeah. But I think that's the issue. I think it is that it's hard to discuss this type of thing without making it clear that obviously the blame for all of this.
Yeah, like should, I said, yeah,
should
yeah,
be
yeah.
Like 99.99% should rest solely on Andrew Tate for the yeah, type of 100%. Person that he is.
I mean, guys, we have spoken extensively about what we think about that man. Like, we are not in any way absolving him. We're saying that there exists what I'm saying, that there's a network in which this kind of behavior is rewarded with companionship. And that's why he believes what he believes. If there were no woman for him to couple up with, do you think he would believe what he believes? No. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, I think it's just, yeah, it's hard to like raise this and say what you've just said without someone like jumping the gun and be like, but how can you say that?
Well,
like,
she's it's a victim in all this, blah, blah, blah. You have to have that conversation. Like, you can't, like, Andrew Tate is one side of the coin. Why is what he's saying working? Because other people believe it and other people are buying into it.
Yeah.
You know, you can't just like, you can't talk about him without talking about the kind of entire like network of what is going on here.
I think it's possible for both things that you're saying to be true, in the sense that I think that it can be possible that it might be that this person ended up in the she ended up going out with him due to some kind of... at the end of the day, we're never going to know, right?
Exactly,
There's a possibility that she might have... there might have been a series of events that happened in her past that then led to her to fall into this situation.
And in that situation, I have sympathy. Like, yeah. I wouldn't put a disproportionate amount of blame on her but if that was the case.
But at the same time, I agree with, like... Because I'll say I was skeptical, actually, of when you said, like, oh, this is... It happened after the... stuff came out, and I was like, surely not. And I've gone and checked, and it's like, it actually has. The fact that this is like obviously so recent, and unless she's been living under a rock, she will have seen all of the stuff about Andrew Tate. There is a certain level of it's possible to hold people accountable for their actions. I think you can say, like, look, you might have ended up in this situation because of XYZ, but also that, look, like, at the end of the day, what did you think was going to happen?
You know what it is? I feel like maybe, like, the way you and Simran are reading this, and maybe I've not explained it properly, is that you're localizing it too much onto the situation about this woman and Andrew Tate, whereas what I'm talking about is a kind of a wider picture. And yeah, maybe I've used her as an example where I shouldn't have, but I'm talking about a bigger picture where men have, like, in heterosexual relationships, men have women partners who are running organizations with them. When we talk about, like, sex trafficking rings, it's not men doing it alone. Men will have women partners who will lure the young girls in and give them a face of friendliness and blah, blah, blah. And then they will enact that harm and enact that violence on them. You know, like, I'm talking about that. I'm talking about a world, because I feel like sometimes when we talk about Andrew Tate, it's so polarized, and it's like men and women, you know, and men are the perpetrators and women are completely the victims. And, like, that's just not always the case. You know, there's a network of women who are partnered up with these men who share the same ideals, and in extreme circumstances enact that same violence. And they're part of that program of violence.
And I think this is where I think, I'll reiterate that I think both things can be true, because I think that in those situations, it can be that people have ended up being...
like a survival thing,
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, as they literally, like, they have to do what they have to do to survive, or they've, like, ended up being messed up in so much, messed up in the head that they are actually doing this, or, like, they feel like they have to, whatever.
Yeah.
But at the same time, you can, like, empathize with that, but also be like, look, like, how can you do this when you're literally seeing the evil that is happening?
And again, and also, that's not always the case. It's not always the case that someone has ended there because of a history of abuse or because they're susceptible in other ways. Yeah. Sometimes they genuinely just share the same ideals.
Yeah.
You know, like you know, people that write in to, like, to start, like, what was it? What was his name? That show, Ted Bundy.
Yeah.
Was it him? He got put into prison. He had hundreds and thousands letters. Some people genuinely just believe that that is the order of the world.
Someone married him afterwards.
Right.
Yeah, like, he married him while he was in prison.
Do you know what I mean? And how long are we just going to keep saying, like, oh, well, they're vulnerable and no, they're this and then at some point you have to hold people for account for perpetuating certain harmful beliefs and actions, actually.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. It's a tough conversation that, like, needs to be had. It's hard.
Yeah, and it's not a one answer for all. It is absolutely case by case, and there's so much nuance. But I'm talking of in the cases where there are women who are doing this willingly because they don't believe it's ever going to be them, you know?
Mm.
I think that needs to be looked at.
Yeah. Well, moving on. And
that was a big segue.
It's refreshing to have for once instances where
a disagreement.
We're not all yes menning each other.
Yeah,
I suppose.
True.
And this next one is to do with Rachel Reeves and Sabrina Carpenter. Have you seen what's happened with that?
Mm-mm.
No. So Rachel Reeves is obviously the current chancellor for this Labour government. I think it was either this week or the week before, she accepted 2 free concert tickets to see Sabrina Carpenter at the O2 Arena. She obviously went, I think, with her children. I think she was in some kind of box or something. Mm-hmm. So obviously she got to go for free. And she's defended the decision, saying that I did so because of security measures, right? Which...
Security measures? Sorry, what, are you a bodyguard?
Well, I think she was more like, oh, it's not safe for me as an MP to be at this concert, blah, blah, blah. But... and I think we can't diminish the importance of MP safety, given we've literally had multiple MPs over the past 10 years lose their lives in line of work from both ends of the spectrum. That being said, at a Sabrina Carpenter concert, I don't think that many people are going to recognise you as being the Chancellor of this government, I would argue. but I think the main like issue people had with it is this whole fact that she got free tickets, and they're like giving, especially obviously we've talked about in the past about the salaries of MPs. How is it that you can't, if you really want to go, just pay for it yourself, kind of thing?
I always think this about like influencers that get like free PR, and I'm like, how, like, you lot are the one that need it the least.
Yeah. It's part of a wider conversation to be had. There's like, should celebrities really, and I know it's like looping in MPs with celebrities when they're not really the same thing, but public figures, celebrities, should they be getting free stuff when in reality they're the people that need it the least?
Yeah, these are
the
people that can actually afford to buy it. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's, it was a big like question and mark about that, because I get it, especially in the era of influencers, how a lot of people will like say be out for a meal and they'll have a deal with like the restaurant where they will like take pictures and post about it and give it reviews, and then they'll get the meal for free or whatever. Which I suppose that's kind of like a service in a way, right?
Yeah,
like at least there's some kind of mutual exchange. Yeah, there's an exchange there, whereas the fact that like people getting free tickets to like events and high upper class treatment when in reality they could afford to do it themselves, it kind of just it's almost like it kind of enables this like
class
and class divide, like it enables it further, because these people aren't even having to pay money to keep their place with all this privilege. But that being said, I have just been a bit like, people have been kicking off about it so much over the past week, and I'm just a bit like, is this really like what we're vocal? Like, we're really going for Rachel Reeves over like going to Sabrina Carpenter for free? Like, is this really what like this week's discussion is? Like, I don't know, because I understand people's problem with it, especially seeing as like obviously her government has literally just announced all these welfare cuts, and it's here she is going to a concert for free.
It's just optically, it just doesn't look great.
Yeah,
and I feel like she's just very out of touch with what's going on the ground with like the people in this country, for her to just like go and visibly be seen like enjoying this concert meanwhile.
That's the thing. I think the thing that I think is, it's more just quite stupid on her part, in my opinion.
Yeah,
you know that your government's literally done these things, done all this stuff relating to money, and yet here you are going to free stuff, and it was always going to come out, because as an MP I think you have to declare these sorts of things as like a personal interest and whatever. She's said afterwards that she would not do it again because she now understood how people feel about it.
Okay, so you're not in tune with the constituents like in this country, like you had to have an uproar for you to learn. Okay.
She said, "It's a balancing act in my job to try and be a good parent and also do my job with some of the security challenges that I face."
Then buy the tickets. Then buy the tickets.
Yeah, exactly. I don't know. This is what I think. I think the way people are kicking off about it, I was a bit like, can you not give this energy to other stuff? Like,
yeah, true.
But at the same time, like, I understand that it is this bit of like a double standard. And stop giving, give us free stuff. Why is no one giving us free stuff? Like, literally, what have we got? Like, HB sent us some cupcakes. That was like four years ago.
Yeah. We never get PR, guys.
No. What have we got? Did we got? Oh, Pi Radio gave us a gift basket last Christmas. That was nice. Didn't get one this Christmas, but you know, it is what it is.
That was it. In nearly five years, that's all we've had.
Yeah.
Cupcakes and some biscuits.
Like, you know what? We'll review your restaurants.
Truthfully, we'll review your restaurants.
Yeah. We'll do whatever. Like, why is no one giving us free stuff? I'm not here for it. Right. To round things off, let's end with a bit of positivity. Simran, do you want to let us know the thing that you brought to the chat earlier this week?
Yes, I do.
Yeah.
Hold up. So in positive news, in positive South Asian news, the state of New York has finally recognized the 1984 state-sponsored violence committed against Sikh people in India. So
is that what they called it? State-sponsored?
State-sponsored violence. Sick. And the state senator, Jessica Ramos, actually called it a genocide.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's huge. So Japneet Singh is a candidate for the New York City Council District and an activist for Sikh rights. And he's been campaigning basically since the beginning of his career in politics to have the atrocities committed against Sikh people in the last century to be recognized on a more global platform. And obviously this was a very big milestone. There's actually like videos of like Sikh activists crying in Parliament in New York, or in the building in New York, and because of this resolution. And I think it's just a really big milestone in that as a people, we have this like very collective trauma. Like 1984 was not a long time ago. It was within my mum's lifetime. And for people that were in Punjab at the time, everyone was very, very, very directly involved. So many people lost their lives. And for it to be recognized like this, not only recognized, but recognized as state-sponsored and also labeled as a genocide is a massive deal.
Yeah, I think.
Was it definitely genocide? I've seen massacre here. I'm not sure which one.
No, she called it a genocide.
Okay, good.
I think it's amazing that they firstly labeled it state sponsored, because I feel like a lot of the times these things are written off as like regional conflicts and it's just like, oh, it's the people warring between themselves. When actually calling it state sponsored, it points to a systemic and institutional level of like anti-Sikh violence, which again, I think it's also important that they recognize, because it will allow to put into context the kind of relationship between the Sikh people and the Indian state today. Because you don't go through something like a genocide and it just ends there. You know, especially something as recently in history as 1984.
Yeah, I think it's good as well, because it wasn't actually just in relation to 1984 as well. It was more of like an overall statement, which is actually highlighting the resilience and cultural impact of Sikhs in New York State, whilst then also acknowledging the historical injustices they endured, including November 1984.
Yeah. I think it's important as well that it's like somewhere like America as well, because unfortunately they do have disproportionate amount of like global power, you know. Okay. So somewhere like America, like, it will be hard to for other places and other countries to kind of contend with that.
And obviously, like, Modi just visited as well. They were just together, like, visiting Trump and stuff. And for this to happen, like, in New York as well, I think is a really big deal. So it is just one step closer to accountability and just the fact that it is being recognised on this level and as it is, not in, like, some civil conflict kind of way, but as it was, which is what you know, it being called what it was, which was a genocide, is such a big step towards the goal.
And it's not the first state either. So other state assemblies such as Pennsylvania, Connecticut, and California have already recognized the 1984 Sikh massacres as a genocide, which is obviously then reflecting on a wider growing consensus, like we say, throughout America, of like just how bad this was. And I think a lot of people would be like as well, that people that don't have any knowledge in this just be like, oh, it was 40 years ago, like what good is this gonna do? But it is, it's justice, right? It's a step towards actually acknowledging
it's collective trauma, it's collective healing. Like in the first instance, the Sikh people are owed financial compensation, like they are owed financial reparations for what they underwent. A lot of the times that states and perpetrators of things like genocide don't give that acknowledgement and that accountability is because what follows admission is reparations, and they don't want to give that money up. But even in this situation where, and even though the Sikh people would be completely within their rights to demand that financial reparations, even if they don't, an accountability goes a long way, because it's like you have enacted like a generational trauma onto a demographic of people, and now you're continuing to gaslight their descendants and even them in real time, because again, 40 years is in living memory, you know? So that accountability, I feel like for people who go through things like that, is very, very, very important.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just an acknowledgement, like, okay, this happened to us. The world is recognizing that this happened to us.
I think it's mad as well that needs to be a thing. Like just the fact that is the affirmation holds so much in it. Yeah, it's like it's mad to think that actually
something as small as just like, okay, we did it and we're sorry.
It's also mad to think that.
Well,
not that
we're gonna get a sorry anytime soon.
Just mad to see that they even needed that in the first. Like that the fact that it was a debate. Oh, did this actually happen?
It happened, but what are the terms that we're using to label it? Like. Yeah.
You know, it's not going to replace the lives that were lost and everything that was lost, that they were burning down libraries, all the documentation and stuff that was lost. Like the Golden Temple still has bullet holes in the walls. Obviously, it's now kept there on purpose to remind people of it. But you can see the damage and families still feel the damage. 40 years, like we said, is not a long time. Like my mum still very vividly remembers it. So this is the first step, and it's one very big important step, but it's not, we're still a very long way from getting the reparations that we deserve.
What's everyone doing? Are we also, we lose an hour of sleep tonight?
Oh, yes, back. This is yeah. a this is the real positive, guys. Sunset at 7:45 tomorrow. Yes, we're out the trenches. Yes, yes, we are on the other side, guys. We have fought a valiant fight. It has been troubling and trying, and there were times where I thought I wasn't going to make it, but we are here. We are here, guys. Yes. It's only going to get lighter.
I love how Simran's acting so shocked, and it's like literally the last weekend in March. This always happens. Like,
yeah, but I didn't.
It's come
round
quickly,
March,
innit? Yeah. It's come round quick. That's why. Like you kind of think like it's gonna come. It's still yet to happen, guys. It's happening tonight.
It's because it's cold, but hopefully we're getting that good weather next week.
Yeah, yeah. Oh man, it was a tough winter, guys.
Guys, it was tough.
You've said it's gone on quickly. I think this winter has gone by slow. I don't know if that's because I actually have been gallivanting quite a bit, so it feels like it's been dragged out. But like, yeah.
So I feel like it's been quite.
Congratulations, everyone.
It's an achievement. It's actually an achievement to have made it to this point, but. Yeah, guys, from tomorrow, it's going to be 7:45, and that's when it's still going to be light outside.
Very glad that it's been confirmed for tomorrow. Don't have to do an extra
hour.
We don't have to do that.
Yes, we don't have to do an extra hour. It would have been extra 2 hours, but yeah.
Oh, guys, prepare for like 4.5 months of us being happy.
Oh, wow.
Fingers crossed.
I cannot wait.
You didn't get any more PCNs, did you, Halima?
Oh, don't get me started.
Okay. Right,
no, so I haven't, Right.
Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Bye.
Bye.